This is Sean Paulson with WCRS FM 102.1 and 98.3. I'm here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania at the G20 summit. And last week I reported that the protesters were denied the right to protest. The ACLU sued the city and the Secret Service in order to have the city grant protest permits. And some of the protests were granted the permits after that lawsuit was filed, and others were not. I went to one of the protests that was not granted the permit, but they attempted to march anyway.
You must leave. If you do not disperse, you may be arrested and subject to other police action. Other police action may include actual physical removal, the use of riot control agents and or less lethal munitions, which could cause risk of injury to those who remain. By order of the City of Pittsburgh Chief Police, I hereby declare this to be an unlawful assembly. I order all those assembled to immediately disperse. You must leave the immediate vicinity. If you remain in this immediate vicinity, you will be in violation of the Pennsylvania Crimes Code, no matter what your purpose is.
Where we're going now is the line. This is where all the cops are concentrated. I find this personally, I find this ridiculous because this is probably about a mile from the summit. I was here at a George Bush protest about 2 years ago. We all protested at the David Lawrence Convention Center, and we protested right outside, and that's when George Bush was president. And I think this should say something. You know, Obama is president, and, you know, as much as I don't like George Bush, I mean, Obama is president, and look where we are. Look where the line is. There's more police officers here than protesters. There's about 10 police officers for every single person that's down here. I think that really says something on the downward spiral of what our country is becoming, that in just 2 years, you know, if you want to go protest George W. Bush at the convention center, you can do so right outside. But Barack Obama comes here with 20 other world leaders, and we're not allowed even downtown. We're here in a strip district. We're not even in the same neighborhood as where they're at. This says something. And this is where things are progressing. Well, I'd say, I guess, what do I see right now? I see something that the kind of thing that you would see like in China or in Burma. I mean, in China, you have to have a permit just to have a protest of any kind, and a lot of times you get arrested just if you go there and apply for one. I think that's what could happen here, because this is disturbing. This is really disturbing.
How many do you see?
How many cops?
I'm nervous about it.
At least a few hundred, maybe as many as like 1,000, maybe. All of them have riot gear on, helmets, shields. At this point, it doesn't really look like a whole lot of people here are actual protesters, because nobody's really cheering or anything. It mostly looks like independent media and just standers by, just people that are watching. David Davidson. That's not my real name. I'd rather not give my name. Planet Earth. Sorry, I'm not gonna give my information. My opinions are more important than who I am. I think that's how most people should view it.
This protest Thursday at Pittsburgh, protesting the G20, leaving from Arsenal Park. Police later charged protesters, tear gassed them, arrested them, pinned protesters to the ground with using police dogs. But there were several other protests throughout the city, including the Falun Gong protesters from China and Burmese monks from around the world and around the U.S.
Yeah, my name is Shen Basakara. I am from the International Burmese Monks Organization from New York.
And you participated in the march yesterday.
March yesterday, because we are free for Burma. Then our people, the most, the feeling, the energy, so many students, so many in family, so many monks, in the most suffering in Burma. So we need the freedom in the education, the freedom of speech, the freedom of religious. So we don't need the military regime. We need the democracy in the main country. So we participate in the G20. The world leader came together. That we went to message to change Burma. We need the light American people, you know. This is in the evident freedom. Do we need like this?
And how were you received?
Yeah, and this we a possible in the changes American President Obama. We post in the Burma military regime. So it's possible. We did so. I don't believe in the Burma military regime that they are very very dangerous for our people. So this is very serious. But it's very important message. Now there's a lot of people, a lot of monks, a lot of religious leaders, you know, like same me, my younger brother or big brother, anywhere in the, we don't know that we are in the rest house. I don't have contact with my family or my brother. So all everything is closed.
And what is your history with have you you've protested in Burma before?
Oh yeah, it's in 1988 first in the student leader the demonstration for a democracy. In 2007 the Saffron Revolution, the leader of monks, they also the freedom of democracy. Military regimes attest, you know, in the shooting and guns, so very dangerous for people. So also in the 2,000 people, including monks and the 350 in the Nam J, the injury and suffering, we need the freedom. We need the free from J.
But you witnessed protests in Burma. Can you describe what that was like?
Yeah, I had the ADAC in the 1988, we on the roads, all prepared, or a student, I am young. So we need that in the Burmese, in boys, democracy, yashi, do ye. This is like mean, we need the democracy. We need the democracy. So in military region, they attest. I have injury, this one. This 1988, this one.
And this is a scar on your arm.
Yeah. Yeah, I said, many people, the changes in military to in democracy. We don't like this in the military region, in the military rule. So this is very important. So I'm very important to American people have up changed Burma from the military to in democracy.
And what is your experience in the protests here? Are these protests at all similar to the protests in Burma?
Oh, this is American people. It's a very nice person in the police and the soldier. They cannot attack me because we are in peace protest, peace pure. All is and not non-violent. Non-violence we are system because we are Buddhist monks. We need the peace or United Nations also in the war. We don't need the terrorism. We don't need the non-violence. We don't need the violence. We need the peace pool.
And how many monks are there in the protest?
In the protest, the G20, the International Burmese Monks Organization, are lead to in 28 monks.
How many monks do you know participating in the march total?
Total including in monks in the 32, Burmese activities, democracy activities, SS 82.
Other police persecution included that of Seeds of Peace and Everybody's Kitchen, who are working together to feed everybody.
Bob Johnson, I'm 50 years old, and I do a lot of things. I have a public art and education campaign called ATM and River Cubes, or Artful Trash Management and River Cubes.
And you decided to host Seeds of Peace for the G20 summit. And Could you describe what your experience was with that?
Well, actually, I had intended to go and PROACT on the Gowanus Canal in support of its designation as a Superfund site.
That's in New York.
In Brooklyn. And for a lot of reasons, I was not able to go. I learned that the Seeds of Peace folks were being displaced. Their bus was impounded and one of their members was arrested, and that they needed somewhere that they could be and not get hassled. I met with them and I was really impressed, and I did a little bit of research and spoke to folks in the activist community here who basically gave them the go-ahead, suggested they were the gold standard of activism. And so I agreed to host them.
And the police got involved and wanted the location that you had hosted them at shut down.
Well, for a couple of weeks now, the valley under the Bloomfield Bridge was being surveilled. I thought it was kind of to be expected. There's a great big bridge. It's a very remote spot right in the heart of the city. It's within a mile of the convention center. And so I really wasn't surprised that police would be patrolling the area. And in fact, they were kind of crawling all over the hillside. I guess with the interest of trying to prevent damage to the bridge or any other kind of threat. I expected some scrutiny, and I went to some lengths to speak with all of the law enforcement, to go out and meet with them outside my place to tell them who I was and who these folks were and what we were up to. The trouble, it turned out, was that I spoke with all different kinds of law enforcement, Port Authority, Pittsburgh Police, State Police, and others. And it seemed that often one group didn't know what the other group was doing. There's a lot of ongoing scrutiny, and then things just continued to heat up. There were more and more vehicles, more and more scrutiny. We decided to really try to maintain a boundary at the gate to the yard in front of my studio. I spent some time adjusting the gate so that it was balanced and easy to keep closed. I asked everyone to keep it closed at all times, and that we would have it locked from 10 p.m. till 6 a.m. in the morning, and that basically we just wanted collective members coming and going. And about 11:30 on Sunday night, I had sort of surveyed the camp and put the chain on with the lock, not locked, but through the chain, and the hook was on the gate. And I went back into my studio and sat at my desk to work for a bit. I had asked that if the police came that I be notified so I could talk to them. And I did not witness this, but just moments before, I had myself closed the gate. And for all I can figure, this large show of force somehow made its way into the gate. The gates are distorted, and the hook was missing, the chain was gone. And I went out to meet this group of law enforcement in riot gear with assault weapons.
How many of them were there?
I don't know. There were at least 20 in my immediate vision, and apparently quite a number more behind them, and in fact up and down the street. Apparently they had blocked off the valley and were preventing anyone from coming and going.
And how were the police officers dressed that came into the vicinity?
They were mostly in riot gear or SWAT team gear. They were in a variety of different outfits and capacities. One of them pulled off his mask, and turns out I actually know him. And he indicated to me that this was a matter of national security and very serious, and that I needed to cooperate. At that point, I asked if I could speak to all of the law enforcement, and basically identified myself, identified the group, told them what we were up to, that we had informed police, and that that this was really quite intense and surreal and out of control, and I said that I would like to speak with the collective members, and that I really didn't want them to go any further. And they said okay, and I went and spoke with the collective members. I guess the law enforcement was concerned about weapons, and my feeling was that although this was inappropriate and out of control, that I was willing to allay their concerns about weapons. And when I expressed this to the group pretty unanimously said that they did not want me to allow them in, that they were concerned that certain things that are here could be construed as weapons, that it's happened in their experience that sometimes things are planted and so on. They really just didn't trust the police. And I went back and communicated their concerns to the law enforcement. We actually had a dialogue over the course of about an hour about many things, and my goal was trying to make sure that everybody's legitimate interests were recognized. And I eventually did allow a small group of the police to search, do a limited search strictly for weapons, with the understanding that propane and oxygen and acetylene and things like that that are part of my normal studio and part of a cooking operation would not be deemed weapons.
They didn't find anything, but it was shut down there anyway.
Well, the search went off rather civilly and reasonably well. I had the expectation, I was given the expectation that if no weapons were found, we would not be hassled, we'd be allowed to continue what we were doing. A couple of hours later, there was a whole new barrage of law enforcement, and they were unaware of what had just happened.
You're talking about people dress, law enforcement dress differently?
They never came onto the property. We were not targeted per se, but they were surveilling the valley. And some folks were leaving quite late on account of all of this going on, and they were detained, and their IDs were run and so on and so forth. And I went out and explained to them that we had just been raided and that we allowed them to search for weapons, and we were told we'd be left alone, and to please let these people go home. And apparently that did happen after some time. I don't know, kind of lost track.
Now, so this ended up in the court. Now, who filed the court proceedings, and what happened? What was the outcome?
The ACLU actually was contacted while this was going on, and legal observers were sent who were not permitted to come onto the property during the raid. The next morning, ACLU attorneys were there a lot of press, lots going on. What eventually happened was the city, through the building department, got to my landlord and pressured this old man to require us to ask the groups to leave. It was a tough decision, but I decided I needed to do that so that this, my landlord, whom I like and respect, he's an older gentleman, this was his life's work, was being scrutinized and warned that there'd be inspection of the property and fines imposed for building code violations, $1,000 a day, and so on. So, in any case, this has all been very, very intense and difficult to know what.
It was a difficult situation for him.
For him, I think for everyone. And in fact, I think even some of the law enforcement. I mean, you know, this has been very surreal, weird, and difficult for lots of people. And yeah, in any case, the ACLU asked if I would join the suit. I guess they wanted a some kind of an injunction against the city for to prevent them from ongoing harassment. And I was subpoenaed to testify at that hearing.
And you did?
I did. I was glad to speak to a judge, although I was, my education is ongoing and a bit distressed to see how things go down.
What did the court order?
The court, in a nutshell, suggested that this was a expedited hearing to rule on a specific set of circumstances, and that the criteria for issuing this injunction had not been satisfactorily met. He did indicate that there was, did seem to be issues that would need to be resolved in the normal course of court proceedings, and that money damages might be awarded, but that with so many world leaders being so nearby, and with the case that the city made that if this injunction were executed, their hands would have been tied from maintaining public safety.
So the court made the decision that Caesar Peace could no longer be at that location.
No, the court was never there to decide that. What the court was there was considering was whether or not to restrain the city of Pittsburgh from continued overzealous enforcement or harassment, if you will, The decision was made to actually try to accommodate the bus at Schenley Park during normal park hours, and then that they would have to go to Moraine State Park for camping. And so one of the issues that came out during the hearing was the whole issue of, you know, are these people living there? What is going on? I think the hearing, in theory, failed, but in practice, got a lot of press coverage and basically got some more scrutiny for how such things were being conducted. And it appears that the group has landed in a place where their hassles have been greatly reduced.
And could you tell our listeners where are we right now? We're in the Seeds of Peace camp.
Yeah, I believe we're at the Trinity Lutheran Church on Buena Vista Street in the north side of Pittsburgh. Also happens to be where my home is, a couple of blocks up the street. So in any case, it's...
Do you have anything else that you'd like to speak about or say?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm working on an editorial right now. It's called Both Sides of the Fence, Fomenting Seeds of Peace. And I've seen a lot of polarized antagonisms, and I think that, you know, one of the things I was saying to the collective after this first encounter, I had this idea that if we defend our rights too zealously, we may undermine our goals. And I've since come to think that perhaps I'm a bit naive, having witnessed what did unfold, both by them being ousted after we were told that we would be left alone, and by witnessing the way the federal hearing went down. On the other hand, I'm thinking that perhaps the world could use a bit more naivete and a lot more communication, and that both sides have things to learn from each other.
You certainly made quite an effort to mediate during this whole process.
I did. I didn't feel like I had much choice. It was one of the most intense and surreal experiences of my life. Yeah, and it's really disturbing to see the kind of hysteria on both sides, you know. And I think that I'll have a lot to think about and be trying to communicate in the days ahead.
Thank you very much.
Should I use my real name? Grumble, and I'm working with Seeds of Peace. And we are here basically providing food to folks protesting the current policies of so-called world leaders, or the leaders, let's put it this way, of the 20 richest countries who have been meeting this weekend, and then before that around climate change, which kind of ties into the whole G20 with the International Coal Conference. So what us, and we've been working together with Everybody's Kitchen, have been doing is providing food to the activists who came here to send that message to these heads of state that are meeting here these past 2 days, that they need to take real steps to halt climate change, that they need to address social justice, and they need to quit pandering to multinational corporations.
So you've been doing this work for a long time, and how would you rate this police persecution in regards to your past experiences?
You know, it kind of varies, but this is probably, for a mass action, I guess I would say at least, this is the worst I've ever experienced as far as harassment, intimidation, on an ongoing basis, basically from Friday afternoon all the way to when we arrived at this site at Lutheran Trinity, or Trinity Lutheran Church, on Tuesday afternoon, and then it's dissipated.
Could you describe in brief how you ended up here from where you were before?
Well, basically what the city of Pittsburgh and probably the federal government did, our first site was under the Bloomberg Bridge, and they essentially had lots of police come around. We were raided Sunday night. They put a lot of pressure on the owner of that property, and hence he put pressure on the people leasing it from him to get us kicked out of places. From there, we moved to Lamar, to an old school. That owner was actually woken up at 2 in the morning in his own house and told to go down to the police station. And at 4 in the morning, we were informed we had to leave there at noon. The way that we found this is we called, I believe, one of our folks who's been working with us, Laura, called the Unitarian pastor, and they passed along, maybe she called the Lutheran church, and she looked up the number of Reverend John and called him, and he gave permission. And despite letters from the city and a lot of pressure, he has stood by us.
And what group specifically are you giving food support to through the form of food?
Well, it's basically all kinds of different groups. Three Rivers Climate Convergence we supported earlier in the week. Despite all this harassment and moving, we did manage to cook all the meals that we had committed to, no matter what was going on. Also, the G20 Resistance we cooked for. And then this large march today, which is a coalition of a number of groups, including a couple unions.